Akshay, did you always knew what you wanted to do when you passed out from MBA?
I was all over the place. Saurabh, what about you?
Yaar, meko to tab bhi idea nahi tha, aaj bhi idea nahi hai.
Confused about your career choices? Wondering what steps to take next? In this podcast called Beyond Campus, Saurabh Garg, founder of C4E, and Akshay Dutt, founder of Unnati, are on a mission to crack open the career success code for the youth. Wo bachpan mein kehte the na, tum jo chahe ban sakte ho. So, let's turn the dream into reality.
Everyone talks about building products and services for Bharat, but very few actually manage to build scalable products for Bharat. One of the rare exceptions in the field littered with dead bodies to aspiring unicorns is a startup called MyUpchar. Rajat Garg and Dr. Manoj Garg, who are the co-founders of MyUpchar, have a lot in common. Both are Gargs, both studied at Stanford, worked in the best companies in the US, both were bitten by the Swadesh bug and came back to India to become entrepreneurs. In this fascinating episode of Beyond Campus, Akshay Dutt talks to both of them to understand how the idea of MyUpchar, a medical app for Bharat, evolved and scaled up.
Did your parents have the means to pay for a Stanford education?
So, actually, no. So, my father was working at BSF at that particular point of time. So, you know, and Stanford required to show 60, 70 lakhs worth of cash or liquid asset available with you. So my mamaji actually mortgaged his house and that gave us enough funds to show to the Stanford University that, yes, we can pay the education fees. And that allowed me to get in there. And once I was there, I did my level best to get the RA. So within first quarter, I was able to get an RA that after that kind of funded the entire education. So luckily, we didn't have to draw down on the entire loan. But initially we had that problem. It was actually a pretty big deal because it's not a small amount, right? So think of early 2000. 60, 70 lakhs was like your entire life worth and then more. So it was a pretty big amount. And luckily, you know, all of them came together. They said, okay, no, he's the first person of our family going outside for education. So we need to support him. And luckily that worked out in my favor.
Okay. So is Stanford where you met Manoj?
Yes.
Manoj also is.
Yeah.
Okay. So Manoj, how did you land up in Stanford? What was your journey like?
Fairly similar. I think we were both, you know, all of us are products of our times. So when I was in college, so I went to St. Stephen's for undergrad. I was studying maths. Whether it was the college environment or my family. So my parents are both professors. I have an elder brother and a younger brother. Elder brother was also studying in Delhi University. He's just only 2 years older. So there was always this thing that, you know, I want to study in a quote-unquote real education system, higher education system, because the experience in Delhi University, as good as St. Stephen's was, it's still a far cry from what one would imagine a proper education system to be, right? That was just something at the back of my mind, maybe because I come from an academic family. So when I was in undergrad, so Stevens, I applied to Oxbridge, which was very standard at my college. And I got through to Cambridge. Actually, sorry, I didn't apply to Oxford. I just applied to Cambridge. I got through and then I didn't apply to Oxford because I got Cambridge. But the amount of money that it would have taken to go there was just not affordable for my family. And while my parents offered to mortgage the small house that we lived in, that was just not something I would go with, right? So and there were hardly any scholarships to go around, maybe just two across like all of India for anybody going to study abroad, so for the things that I qualified for. So I didn't get the scholarship, and of course, like, I didn't want my family to pay for it, and there was the third option of taking a loan on my head, but I've just like grown up in an environment where despite my economics education, and I know loans serve a financial purpose and everything, the psychological aspect of being in debt and that much debt at that age just didn't like make sense to me. So I didn't want to take a loan on my own. So I didn't end up going to Cambridge. So, you know, it kind of stayed somewhere in my mind that, you know, I have to kind of go. And, you know, as human behavior goes, the things that you can't get are the things you want the most, right? So so then I went to Delhi School of Economics. I switched from maths to economics because it just seemed like the things that I was intellectually interested in could be better studied and answered by economics than mathematics. And again, D School has a very rich history of people going down the academic path and studying and teaching at some of the best institutions in the world and contributing a lot to the study of economics. So as it happened, I did well, and my professors encouraged me to go for a PhD. That wasn't really part of the plan when I went to D School, but and it kind of tied in with that whole, you know, idea of ek din to bahar ek achhi jagah padhne jana hai. So I applied, I got through to a bunch of places, and I chose Stanford out of them. There were quite a few schools that were offering. It just seemed, for what I wanted to study, Stanford was a good place. That affordability question was still there, right? I can't afford to pay for a 5-year education, let alone a 2-year thing. And I couldn't afford a 2-year education at Cambridge. How could I like pay for a 5-year education? But thankfully, Stanford and most top economics programs support their students with fellowships, scholarships, TA-ships, RA-ships. That's taken care of before you go there. So that's the difference between Rajat's experience and mine, where I knew I had a 2-year fellowship before I went in, and there was a guaranteed teaching assistant or research assistant position which should pay for the rest of the education. So I landed up there. It was like Rajat said, it was like an amazing experience. It doesn't matter, like, you know, which department you're in, you just see these amazing people. So one of my advisors just got the Nobel Prize this year. That's the kind of place that, you know, it is. So quite wonderful.
So how did the two of you connect? Was it like the Desi factor? Like
a little bit, but also my roommate there, who was a friend from school since we were in class 3. So basically a childhood friend, and Rajat are related. So he and Rajat were roommates the prior year. So Rajat had gone to Stanford 1 year before me. Ankit, who was my roommate, and his roommate prior to that, he was the common connection, how we got to know each other. And funny story, Ankit, who's obviously my age because we were classmates in school, and Rajat are also related. Except that Rajat is Mr. Mama and he's Bhanja. So 2 years apart, they're Mama and Bhanja.
Okay. Then Rajat, what next after Stanford? Like, did you form like a very, very strong bond with Manoj that it remained tight throughout, or was it like something which grew over the years?
I think it kind of grew over the years. Of course, you know, we kept hanging out at different school college parties and all. But I don't think we were thinking of, or we were imagining, that we'll start a company together a decade down the line. At least that was not the thought process at that time. So I actually had it down on my way. So after Stanford, I joined Amazon. It was a pretty eye-opening experience about how technology actually gets used at a very, very scalable way to solve customer problems. You don't get to see the impact of technology in many, many organizations. Mostly you are rehashing what somebody else has done, 10 years back. But here you are kind of rethinking, reimagining every particular aspect of the business using technology, and at a scale that was like unseen of, unheard of before. So I spent a few years there. Then one of the senior VPs at Amazon left and started his company. And he basically was looking for people to had a online marketing. So I joined the organization to initially head the online marketing for DataSphere.
And what does DataSphere do? Like, what were you marketing?
Yeah, so DataSphere had a bunch of websites initially where, you know, basically real estate listings websites. But the focus was more from a perspective of second home management perspective. So we had a website called LandWatch, which was around selling land parcels, large land parcels, and people will buy them for making a ranch or go hunting and stuff like that. And then there was another for resorts and another for new constructions, et cetera, et cetera. So it was there, you know, when I joined, the traffic was in low tens of thousands of visitors a month. 2 years down the line, we were the largest real estate listing website in land space and in resort space, and doing 2-3 million per month on both the sites. Later, you know, the company kind of outgrew its initial ambitions, and we basically started doing two different things. And one of the division was real estate division, and that was more focused on the new media business. And I was then the general manager of the real estate business overall to grow that. So there I spent a total of 4 years.
Which city was this?
This is Seattle, rainy Seattle. Then 2011, early 2011, I was just at a point of time in life where I had spent around 8-9 years in US. I was also contemplating building something of my own, doing some startup of my own. I came to a conclusion that if I need to start something of my own, India is probably a better bet to live in, because in either case, you can build any global product sitting from anywhere. I wasn't able to see myself settling in US forever. It was a point of time in life where I had to make a decision whether to, settle in US forever or just come back. I moved back to India in 2011, started a company called Social Apps HQ, which was basically into building Facebook apps that companies can use for running their own marketing campaigns on Facebook. And at that time, a lot of companies were running campaigns to increase their likes, increase their fans, and figuring out ways to engage sell to their fan base.
So give me an example of what you developed. Like a app you developed?
Yes. Client. So basically, there was a small e-commerce store, right? Right. So Vin Diesel put a Facebook on his Facebook page, put a store showcasing some of his awesome products, right? Some of his fan related products. There was a cycling contest. So a cycling group. So they will post pictures of all the events that they will go to and details about upcoming events where people can sign up. Then there were schools who were using our app for hottest girl contest, and you know, people will nominate some girl or some guy in the school, and then rest of the school will vote rank someone on the top. And you'll see a lot of activity in that 20-30 day period on the app. So bunch of things like that will, you know, increase engagement, traffic, reach, recall of the brands with their fans.
Is this something that still happens, building apps for Facebook? Like, I've not heard much of it.
Not anymore. So around 2015, 16, Facebook kind of deprioritized apps within Facebook pages. So that kind of killed the entire ecosystem about building these apps. So, and our business was fairly dependent on Facebook. So we also then decided to sell that off. And after selling that business, we basically, I started this e-commerce marketplace called Shimply.
So when you sold that, like, you know, I just want to understand how a business gets sold. Like, how do you value a business like that? Like, is it a multiple of revenue or what is it like?
Yeah, it depends on a number of things, right? So if the revenue is growing, you get a higher multiple. If you are on a in a market where you are dependent on another company and then suddenly the company pulls the carpet under you, then it gets valued very differently. So the way we got sold were basically for the asset and database that we had built. Because, you know, 1.5, 1.6 million businesses had signed up to use our apps. So a company in US was interested in procuring that data. So it was more of an asset sale versus a multiplier of revenue sale.
Okay. Are you at liberty to tell us how much it got sold for?
So it was always under NDA. So we never revealed the name of the company who bought it and the money for which it bought, but it was decent enough to, you know, try attempting an e-commerce portal on our own. And of course, you know, the joke goes about e-commerce and airlines that if you take a, if you want to become a millionaire, take a billionaire, start an airline, and you'll end up with a millionaire. And if you want to, you know, become a garibpati, then you start with a crorepati and start a e-commerce business, and then you become a garibpati.
And then, and then along the way, don't take funding that's being offered.
Don't jale par namak mat chilko. Anyway, good things happen. So, you know, we started this e-commerce portal Shimply, and we were selling authentic Indian products. So, year down the line, we converted the site
like
into
Etsy, the US mein, like.
Yeah, kind of Etsy or Craftsvilla at that time in India. So, we a year down the line, we converted the site into Hindi. And suddenly Ayurveda became like, you know, 50% of our sales. So Manoj and I, Manoj had also returned to India and he was trying hands at different things. So we started discussing this phenomena and we, you know, kept trying at Shimply different things for an year. And in December 2016, Manoj and I discussed, we said, yeah, there's something serious here because whatever content we created was getting a lot of traffic from the Hindi world. Sales were already there. So we decided to launch Myopchar and shut down the previous entity. So that's how we came about launching Myopchar.
And what was this jale pe namak chidakne wala comment that Manoj made of...
Yeah, we got a funding offer from a renowned angel investor who was ready to invest all of the, was ready to get the seed fund arranged and all that of crore and a half.
And we were for Shimply or Myopchar?
For Shimply. And we were like, valuation thodi kam hai. So, right. And I think, to be fair, he was offering the right valuation. It was just that our expectation was not right at the time. So we didn't take that funding and of course ended up burning quite a lot of money from our from my own pocket, like literally burning through my entire 401k, all my cash reserves, everything. During the journey, Craftsvilla raised quite a bit of money. So suddenly... all the investors who were kind of showing interest kind of went away overnight, and they were like, yeah, abhi space mein ab koi aur investment nahi ki jayegi types. That happened. So when we started MyUpchar, we were fairly, our heads were fairly, we were fairly level-headed by that time. Ki paisa jo de raha hai, wo bahut badi baat hai, le lo.
Valuation ka kya karna hai, paisa do.
And how did your wife take this? Like, you burning through your savings and all. Like, does she work or?
Yeah, she's a doctor. Thankfully, she kept advising me not to do this and not to do that. What about job and all? But at the same time, she kept funding the household expenses. So that kind of helped out, because for a few years, I wasn't able to contribute. So she was a big support during that time.
Right. Yeah. Same for me also. Like, for almost first 6-7 years of our marriage, my wife was running our household. So, I mean, without the women in our lives, I think. So, Maraj, tell me about your journey. Like, you spent a good 6 years in Stanford, and how was that experience like? And
so, I mean, it was probably, you know, they say college is the best time of your life. I mean, as good as college was, when I say college, I mean undergrad. For me, probably Stanford was even better. If for nothing else, just the kind of people who were around you, your peer group, your colleagues, the professors, not just your department, but others. Like, to give you an example, one of the advanced classes that we did, and I could do the advanced classes because I had a maths background. I'd already done a master's in economics in D school, so I was much better prepared than most others for the PhD program, and I could do the advanced classes much sooner than others could. There was this 17-year-old kid sitting there, and just in one of the conversations with the professor, I was like, "So how does this like 17-year-old kid manage this class?" He goes, "Well, that 17-year-old kid is a professor in the maths department." So you know, that was the kind of place that it was. So it was like, intellectually, it was very, very fulfilling, you know. So like, anything that I dreamt of could be achieved, or any sort of like arc that you have to sit and think and imagine how the world could be, that kind of, you know, that was a place to do that. But it just so turned out that the whole process of research wasn't something that I could sort of do for the rest of my life, because it's a very slow, long process. I need to see results a lot faster, a lot sooner. I think part of the reason why I switched from maths to economics was because I wanted to be doing something which was closer to the quote unquote real world. Mathematics that I was doing was largely abstract maths, right? So think of random constructs that you've made up in your head, and then you go and you say, you know, this construct, then it's beautiful because then you can do this extra thing, and it has this shape and that this. So, you know, it's great if you get lost in that world, but if you pull out and you say, look, I want to live in the real world, then it doesn't work for you. So I kind of went into economics, and then it turns out mathematicians had kind of taken over economics also, which is why economics, they welcome people with a maths or a technical background. So that again kind of just became very, very abstract. And research in any case is a little slow, right? So there's a huge lag. So there is important work that happens, don't get me wrong. It just takes a long time to sort of come to fruition, right? So I needed to be a little bit closer to the real world. So I went into management consulting after Stanford. So a little bit of it was seeking more of the real world. A little bit of it was I didn't exactly know what I wanted to do. So management consulting is a simple place to sort of hide from who you really are or kind of just like park yourself while you figure out who you really are.
And make a lot of money.
Sorry?
And also make money.
And also make money. Yes, that didn't hurt. Look, I was like 28, 29. I'd been on a student stipend the whole time. So I didn't mind not being poor for a little while. It's for that little short while. But funnily enough, you know, even when I did, I was making whatever management consulting salary was, I was still largely living like a student. So like my friends who would observe me was like, you know, that grad student life has been ingrained in you. So as a graduate student, you're perennially short of money. And I was still living like that. I had to like somebody had to yank me out of it and say, look, you're not a grad student anymore. You can live a little. that was quite funny when I realized how my habits changed anyway.
And pay his bills.
Sorry?
And pay his bills.
And pay his bills, right. But management consulting, you know, so I ended up spending, I was lucky to spend most of my time at the Gates Foundation. So the Gates Foundation was a client for BCG in Seattle. Rajat, were you there in 2011-12 in Seattle?
I left in 2011.
Acha, theek hai. So I landed up in Seattle in 2011. And like Rajat said, you know, so the standard joke about Seattle used to be there are two colors, gray and dark gray. Matlab, always coloring in the city. It's always freaking cloudy, right? So, anyways, I was like, it didn't really bother because hum to yaar office mein hote the, humne bahar kya nikalna hai, right? So, work from daybreak to the time you sleep. So, it didn't really bother me that much. But it was very, very fulfilling. Sorry, go ahead.
Gates Foundation. What were you doing at Gates Foundation?
Yeah, so it was a project on figuring out how you can deliver healthcare to the bottom half of the pyramid in South Asia through private healthcare providers. So the thesis is, you know, typically the thesis, if you think about healthcare for the bottom half of the pyramid, is that the ability to pay is pretty low. So to provide them high quality healthcare, which typically will end up being expensive, the public sector has to come in. No private sector, there isn't a model within the private sector that can provide you the kind of facilities that that you would provide at in a tier one city or in a modern Western society where the ability to pay is quite high, or if you can afford insurance coverage doesn't exist, right? At least not back then, 2011, the kuch nahi tha. Now the government has been doing a few things. The success can be debated, but whatever. Like, it still doesn't cover, you know, you still can't go to the highest end hospital and get yourself a bed there with that insurance. So the question was, is there a model where you can, where a private player can actually provide good healthcare and scale it up in a sustainable way? Right. So, which is funnily enough, the exact same problem we are trying to solve now. So, while at the foundation, we were evaluating 16 or 17 different models from all over the world. At that time, most of them, the only ones that kind of worked were where technology was involved. There was others just didn't work. Let's say the context of India, right? Probably 70 to 80% of medical staff and infrastructure is concentrated in 10 cities, in the 10, top 10 cities, right? So how are you going to take healthcare to the rest of the 95% of the population? Right? That's the question. So the people won't go. So let's say the government comes in and someday says, we'll spend a whole lot of money and build up all that infrastructure, hospitals, this, that, which is actually not going to happen because it takes a lot of money and we don't have that. But even then, where are you going to bring the staff from? Right. So we don't train enough doctors. We don't train enough paramedical staff. We just don't train enough people. Right. Which is the saddest thing. Like, we have so many people in this country, but we are not training them, which is just, you know, it's just stupid. And whoever does become a doctor or a paramedical staff, because of the concentration of of the rest of the healthcare infrastructure, and also because of the opportunities for themselves and their families, they will end up in those bigger cities, right? So, aap udhar le jana bahut mushkil hai healthcare, right? So that's where we thought that technology would actually play a part, and you know, kind of for me, it comes around in a full circle where we were looking very, very hard at all these models in 2011-12, sitting in Seattle. But we didn't really find anything satisfactory. There were things, you know, you can do micro solutions but it's very, very hard to, we didn't find anything that scaled to cover an entire country like India, right? Which is when Rajat actually came to me and said, yaar, aisa kuch soch rahe hain, do you want, let's discuss this, kuch ye phenomenon chal raha hai yahan pe. So that, you know, that whole Ayurveda, Hindi Ayurveda section getting a lot of traffic. It kind of like, you know, like a light bulb kind of went off and it was like, arre wah, ye to pehle to socha tha, kuch interesting hai, dekhte hain kya hai, let's double click. And it kind of came together.
So though in between your stint with BCG, where you were with Gates Foundation and starting Myopchar, what were you doing in that period, like a 4-year period in between?
Yeah, so after a year and a half at BCG, I kind of decided I wanted to come back to India. I'd spent, you know, 8 or 9 years by that time in the US, and I wasn't married. And as we have astutely observed in this conversation already, it's easier to move around the world when you're single and you don't have other responsibilities. So I figured I can. So my parents were here. Both my brothers were also in the US at the same time. And they were in fields which would not really lend themselves well to coming back to India. So my elder brother was and is an academic. So, you know, academia in India and the US is very, very different. And my younger brother was. My younger brother was in finance. So the kind of opportunities you have in finance in the US or London or, you know, other places are way better than what, at least at that time, you had in India.
And especially without a CA qualification, getting a well-paying job in India would have been very tough.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was, my younger brother was, did his MBA at Wharton. So, he was also at BCG, an IIT graduate. So, for him, the opportunities weren't that much different. I'm talking about like the relative difference in the opportunity and how lucrative the opportunity would be if you were working in London versus in India, right? So, it didn't seem like either of them would it would make professional sense for them to come back to India. And you know, I was a management consultant. You're basically a generalist at that point, even though you've spent 6 years becoming an economist. In my case, well, 8 years. But last 2 years you've been a generalist, so you can be a generalist anywhere. So it was a purely emotional decision to come back, and I did. And after I came back, I just spent, you know, a few months just sort of looking around, understanding what's going on, because truth be told, I hadn't followed at all what was going on in India. You just hear these stories, you know, that was a time in India, everything, like the economy was booming, stuff was going crazy. The whole world was, you know, India was going to become this promised land. So I'd only just like heard of those stories from friends, family, but I hadn't actually looked at any data myself, even though I was an economist. But I was doing abstract economic theory, not like the real world macro data kind of economics. So I spent some time looking around, seeing what's happening. It was actually really, really exciting. Startups were happening left, right, and center. And you know, living in the Bay Area, you do get bitten by that bug. Someday you want to do something of your own. So before that, I decided, you know, I was 29, 30 by this point, and I'd never worked in India, right? So I figured I should at least, you know, spend some time working in India. And I went to work with this group called Dalmia Bharat Group in their for as a EA to the MD. And we agreed that I should spend some time in their cement business, because I was the biggest business. And for me also, it was just like super exciting. I thought I'll get to see real India, which I did. So I spent like a good 6 to 8 months in Chennai and traveling around all over South India and seeing how sales are done, what kind of, you know, how business is done in Bharat. So South India pura ghumata achhe se. So it was kind of cool. But of course, you know, that isn't where my heart lied. It was for me just a way to get, you know, experience of real India. And in the meantime, a friend of mine who was just about graduating from NCIAD, so this is a friend from D school, he and I started talking about doing something of our own. he wasn't like, he'd been thinking about it for a while and whatnot. So we started a small venture. The idea was to build a ad exchange for offline ads. So think of the world of ads except for online. So, you know, your newspaper, your pamphlets, your hoardings, what's called outdoors advertising. So can there be like a single platform that kind of aggregates it all? Right. That's kind of what we were trying to build. We had ek ded saal usme laga. Ultimately, the place where we ended up. So neither he nor I were technical people. We, in our foolishness at that point, didn't realize that it would have been better to start with a tech product and then build businesses. We thought, let's first prove it in a single vertical where we can aggregate ads for a single medium, offline medium, and then we can build a product and auction ads and do all of that stuff. Wo chala nahi, matlab obviously. But chala, this is thik thak tha. We also pretty much had an offer for a good Series A kind of a funding. We'd put in, my friend and I had put in a fair amount of money into it to run it for a couple of years. You know, so the aforementioned high paying salary at BCG was thoroughly decimated. And like Rajat, you know, also we didn't like look for funding until like fairly late in the game, and we were like khich lenge. Because also money was coming in, right? So you figured that at least you're not burning money every day. But ultimately, both of us realized that we've kind of taken it down a path where it doesn't scale. It could have turned into a lifestyle business, like a proper lifestyle business. But we didn't want to create a lifestyle business at that point, neither he nor I. So we were quite aligned on that. And we decided to shut it down. I think it was, we gave it a solid 2 years. Jitna bhi ho sakta tha, like we'd gone down every rabbit hole, every nook corner, explored every possibility. But uske aage wo jata nahi tha. So 2 years went there. So great learning experience. I saw a lot of things, learned a lot of things, how they happen in the real world. Nothing to do with tech. There are other things also. I mean, there's the real world also, which was a very good experience. Then in the meantime, I discovered yoga. It turned out that I like actually really, 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 really like yoga. And then after some time, all I was doing was just yoga. And I used to really enjoy teaching when I was at Stanford. Mujhe bahut khushi milti thi padhake. So I started teaching a little bit on the side as well. So it was a very light week that I used to have a couple of hours of yoga in the morning, then study yoga, and then teach a little bit in the evening. So I was doing that for 2 years, and I used to rock climb also. So in the meantime, Rajat, was doing his thing at Shimply, and this happy accident with the Ayurveda Hindi section happened, and he kind of pulled me into this and said, let's look at this. And we did. And I was still a little hesitant, but initially, because that life was kind of going well, not anybody's dream of like a professionally successful life, but a very happy life for sure. So he was like, rock climbing band kar, yoga band kar, chal kaam karte hain. So I used to rock climb also.
Okay.
So chal bhai ye kaam karte hain. I was like, theek hai. Okay, because this seemed really interesting. Right? It was just like, dude, like this is like so far. And so 2016 mein kuch tha nahi vernacular wagera. Like nobody was talking vernacular. In fact,
was the thesis with which you started? Like, so you had Ayurveda as a product category that was selling, and to people who can who have Hindi as their first language. So, like, what was your thesis, and what did you see it becoming when you started up?
So the initial thesis was that if you look at US, UK, and any other developed market, even there, a lot of people look for healthcare information. when awareness and access is not really that much of a problem. And your case in point, you know, WebMD, Healthline, Mayo Clinic, all of them getting like 100 to 200 million visitors a month. And when you look at India, awareness is not there. Access is not there. So our initial thesis was that if we create something like this, really, really good repository of healthcare information in Indian languages, then the demand will automatically come because people must be looking for this. And since there is nothing out there that is serving it, it's not getting captured, it's not getting reflected anywhere. So that was the initial thesis that, you know, given the demand outside in English, where awareness and access are not a problem, in India, it should, both of them are a huge problem. So if we create something like this, a lot of people would be looking for this information, would be asking for that information.
So you were essentially looking at building a content platform.
So initially, we started with building a content platform. And as we, you know, executed for first 12 months, it was very, very clear that we'll have to do the access solutions as well, beyond the awareness part, the content part. So we were like literally people were asking questions on our Facebook pages, on our, you know, on the email, on the कहीं से उन्हें हमारा लिंक मिल जाएगा फोन मिल जाएगा दे विल कॉल अप कि मेरे पेट में दर्द है मेरे बच्चे के 10 साल से ये प्रॉब्लम चल रही है क्या करें मतलब इट वाज लाइक लिटरली एंड देन द डॉक्टर्स हु वर राइटिंग कंटेंट ऑन आवर प्लेटफॉर्म दे वर गेटिंग कॉल्स एंड ईमेल्स फ्रॉम ऑल दीस पीपल सो मनोज एंड आई सेड लेट्स यू नो लेट्स बिल्ड आउट अ कंसल्टेशन प्लेटफॉर्म सो दैट पीपल कैन आस्क क्वेश्चंस एंड वी कैन एड्रेस देम इन अ स्ट्रक्चर्ड वे Because like this, it's impossible for us to answer like, you know, 500 questions on Facebook. YouTube was not there, but when we started YouTube channel, same problem. Thousands and thousands of comments every day, right? All of them asking for an answer right away. So it was virtually impossible to handle all that load. So we started a consultation platform. People came in, asked their questions. We enrolled a number of doctors on our marketplace, and we started offering free consults to our consumers. So that was the initial part, and then you know, as we dug deeper and deeper and deeper, we realized that there is a lot more to be done because you know, doctors will write medicines which are not available locally, or are you know, are not genuine. So how do you solve for that? How do you solve for revenue because nobody wants to pay online? Especially if you go in these tier three areas, cities, rural areas. So I spent some bit of my time in Eastern UP trying to figure all of that out. And what we realize is that people go to quacks. They don't pay, they don't get charged for consultation. They pay for medicine. And then if something goes serious, they go to a Sarkari hospital. Again, in the government hospital, they don't pay for consult, they pay for medicine, primarily because medicines are not available in the government dispensary and they're available outside. Once we realized that, we said we cannot charge for consults because we tried and we were not getting any conversion rate. And we realized that this is the root behavior. So how do you then monetize on the pharma side of it? Went through a ton of iterations to solve for it. And now I think we have a model that once we scale it out, will really, really solve for the healthcare access problem in Bharat.
Okay. So when you first started the free consultation, you were paying the doctors who were doing this, or like what? How was the supply of it being handled?
In very, very initial days, we basically tried to convince the doctors that, hey, you know, these patients are in very, very remote areas and they don't have access to doctors. So why don't you provide us with the sum of your time to answer that.
Okay. As a philanthropic initiative.
As a philanthropic activity. But very, very quickly we realized it's not possible. Because we are not getting like 10 questions a day, right? We are getting like 1,000 questions a day. Then we basically started paying doctors a fixed fee per consult. So it's not a large amount, and doctors do it primarily for some bit of extra cash, and of course the fact that they are able to create a positive impact in the rural part of India. And also the third angle for them is that, you know, a lot of the doctors get to see a ton of variety of cases that they won't be able to see in their local clinic. So from a learning perspective, from a social impact perspective, and of course some bit of extra money as well. So all of these combined kind of works for our doctors.
So and these doctors would be like typing out the answer in Hindi, because I'm assuming the questions would be coming in Hindi.
So most of it is done in English. So patients also write typically in English, not pure Hindi. So Hindi input keyboards are, not by default on the phone. So usually people kind of learn typing in English, or they will be doing voice recording or video input. So, but doctors typically will write English.
Okay. So this could have also become like a Quora, you know, how Quora is like a user-generated content.
Quora, see, healthcare is a little different overall. There is a privacy issue. So people who are asking something about their period issue or their some medical condition don't want it to be in public domain. Second, if you have cuff problem and a 6-year-old kid has a cuff problem, it's not that answer to your problem will directly apply to the answer of the other kid's problem. Third, people are not looking for some other person with experience to answer. Like in US, you will see people will build communities around cancer and heart issues and diabetes, and people will help each other out who have gone through it. In the very, very initial days, our consultation was more like a community. But the users will only ask, Dr. Saab, meri mujhko ye problem hai, mujhe iska jawab do. So there was, like in India, the concept of community is not there in healthcare. People are looking for a doctor to respond. So healthcare is very specific. So you cannot have open consultations. You have to have privacy. You have to have one-to-one conversations. So you cannot use it for my you cannot think of it as a UGC content. Yes, this can be used by, let's say, hospitals for training their students. Colleges, medical colleges to train their students. But it's not Quora. It's different from that.
Okay. You had like a good amount of traction that you saw of people asking medical questions, and then you started building the supply for it by paying doctors. So how did that morph into what you are doing today?
We took a lot of steps in the middle. Mid last year, we basically said, we have to monetize because nobody has really done any monetization in tier 2, tier 3 space. And such, our platform...
You already raised funding before that, right? So how did you raise funding without monetization strategy? Like, what was your pitch to investors?
Our seed round, essentially the story is what Rajat told you. So we said... look, there is this huge population that's online. They're all looking for healthcare information. They're looking for healthcare services, and they don't have it because Physically, it's not present because they're not in tier one cities, and they don't have access to any information because they only consume content in their own mother tongue, right? So if we can actually, as a way of getting all these people on a platform, we can create this huge content platform in Indian languages with very high quality, credible content. So there was some content which news websites were producing. So they'd say things like, cancer ka ilaaj neem se, or ye juice peelo to ho jayegi problem solved. Like, they're literally publishing this, and this is your top news outlets. I really don't know what editorial checks they have, but it seems like as far as healthcare is concerned, they don't they couldn't care less. So there was clearly this white space. There's room to do that. So the question really was, and we were fairly upfront. Look, we don't actually have a monetization strategy right now. But once, you know, initially we do this and we do this fast and we do this well, think of it like a land grab, the kind of old 2002 kind of a model. Let's get all these eyeballs, then we'll figure out some way to monetize. It was literally like that because, you know, the Bharat user in 2016 to us, they were exactly at the spot where the rest of us were in 2005 or so, or maybe even earlier, because the internet was just starting out for them. Right. So, and the same services that you built for tier one didn't port over, which is also what Rajat was kind of alluding to earlier, later on. So, you know, that hypothesis, of course, the questions we used to get were those days, yeah, sachi mein, are these guys online? Who's seen them? Who's heard of them? So we used to give them proxy data like, Hindi news websites are much bigger than English news websites. So they were, if you put them together, there are millions and millions and millions of people on those Hindi news websites like Bhaskar, Dainik Jagaran, Matrubhumi, so on and so forth, right? So we're like, look, these people are online. They are reading, right? What else are you going to do on a news website, right? So video wasn't that big at the time. It was a very, very difficult fund. I mean, I guess every fundraise is a little difficult, but I think we probably spoke with over 150 people before the first couple of people came on board. So
the pitch to these people was that you're building a WebMD in local language. Like that was your pitch? Okay.
Kind of. And we're saying, look, it's in local languages. So there were questions like, ye log online hai bhi nahi hai, hai to healthcare ki padhenge nahi padhenge. And what if a WebMD comes in someday and decides to convert all its content into Hindi? So there were all those questions, and you answer those to the best of your ability. But it really was hard to get angels on board initially until the first three. So Alok Mittal, Rajan Anandan, and Mohit Satyanand were the three who were the first three to back us. And then once these three guys were there, the round filled up very, very rapidly. So kind of, you know, like the standard leader follower kind of a experience. I kind of said it in, you know, in the passing, we spoke with 150 people before these three guys came on board. That journey of that 150 conversations is filled with pain. It's a bahut dard bhara safar hai wo, 150 conversations of hearing no. And for multiple reasons, you know, there is this, every entrepreneur who's heard no from an investor will lament that the investor doesn't quite understand this, that. But, you know, I used to always say to Rajat, I always felt like the fundraise wala jo process, and I feel like it's kind of like dating. You know, you meet a lot of people, you may seem attracted to some, not to others. You'll date a little, then it'll fizzle out. But in the end, you just need one to say yes, right? Yeah.
Do you think they backed the idea or they backed the team?
I think the first three backed the team. Please, if you do speak with them someday, do ask them. I guess we didn't ever ask them. But they backed the team. They loved the space that we were in, but they had faith in us is what I would... I'm trying to not sound like an arrogant prick, but I believe they thought that we were committed to what we were... the problem we were presenting to solving it. And they liked the space we were in. It was a huge space, white space. It was a huge need. And we had the early mover advantage. So to them, it made sense. Even though we didn't know the exact monetizing solution, they kind of believed that we'll find a way.
And when was the angel round done? Like
2017.
Okay. And then pretty quickly, you did your Series A also. So by the time you were in Series A, was it the same pitch like WebMD for Bharat?
Yeah, it's, the difference was that I think when we were raised our seed, I don't remember very well, but I think we were doing 10,000 a day visitors. And I think by the time we were raising our Series A, we were doing 300,000 a day within 10 months from the seed. So the graph was very, very positively pointing north. And that hypothesis was bearing out, you know. And it seemed at that point that it will north hi jata rahega, and that this is a huge opportunity to actually become the platform to seek healthcare for Bharat. So that was kind of the vision that we had, and we shared with investors, and some of them saw it similarly.
How does WebMD make money? Like, do they serve ads, or what is their monetization?
Primarily ads, but less consumer facing, more professional. So they have a consumer facing product, and then they have a professional one for medical professionals. So they kind of become like a digital MR, and they make a lot of money through those. Of course, there's a lot of ad money in campaigns that they do for consumers as well. Like Johnson & Johnson will do a campaign, for example, right? So there is money there as well. But India mein wo ad rates utne mazedar nahi hai.
Did you also experiment ads? Like, did you speak to pharma companies to see if that is a viable way to monetize?
So we didn't do that initially, because we were just like head down and focused on growing. Now we're beginning to do that, but you know, so the advertising and marketing, quote unquote, is not allowed for your prescription products. For OTC, it's allowed. OTC is your over-the-counter, for which you don't need a prescription. So your, let's say your lozenges, your for cough syrup, you can't, something that's prescribed, but for lozenges, you can, so on and so forth. So we're beginning to do that now. Of course, you know, the ad rates are less by a factor when you come from the US to India. And then when you go from English to Indian languages, they're again less by a big factor. So
what are you now? Like, are you still WebMD for Bharat, or, you know, how would you describe yourself now?
No. We're we've then evolved, like Rajat was beginning to say earlier. So then, you know, let me just take you through the steps, and it'll become clear where we are and why we became that. So people began wanting to speak with the doctors who were creating that content with us, right? So this, and by this point, millions of people were coming on our platform, and it just, you know, there was this almost desperation to speak with a doctor, because, you know, there is a genuine lack of access to doctors and medical infrastructure where our audience comes from. So we started connecting people with these doctors, and soon, you know, there were thousands and thousands of these conversations coming in. So it was a very rudimentary product. At that point, teleconsultation was still in the gray area. So neither we nor the doctors knew what the right approach here was legally. There was nothing in it. It wasn't illegal, but there wasn't anything which said this is okay to do, right? Which is not the case now. So now there is these telemedicine practice guidelines which say it's absolutely kosher to do that, and which is why you see a boost in telemedicine. But 2018 or 2019, early 2019-ish, when we were doing this, tab kuch nahi tha.
It was like a WhatsApp kind of an interface where people would...
That's exactly what it was.
But this was free for the users. You were not monetizing.
No, we weren't charging. And that thing has continued to scale as we, traffic has continued to increase. So today, about 25 million people come on our website. Another 25 million people we reach on social media, right? So that's a monthly reach of about 50 million people. About a million of those people request us for a conversation with a doctor. And because it's free, we're able to service about 100,000 a month. So then, you know, the next question comes up. So, you know, Rajat went and did a couple of camps as well in rural areas, just to see, what the medical experience there is, the health seeking behavior there is. So thing that we found there was that people were very happy to speak with doctors over the phone through video chat. But then the very common refrain was, but sir, aap medicine bhi le aate to achha rehta. I think Rajat can tell you more about those scams if you want to dig deeper into the experience there.
Rajat, why don't you tell us like how that evolution happened?
We weren't actually aware of the problem related to medical supply chain or medicine supply chain in rural areas. So when we sat down with these people living in the villages, we said, so why don't you ask this chemist, he'll bring that medicine. He said, the doctor here is a jhola chhar. And this chemist also, adhi dawaiya, they are not legitimate. This guy goes to the Sarkari hospital, and because his chacha works there, he gets the right medicine there. Otherwise, no one else is able to get the medicine from the Sarkari hospital. Then we dug in deeper with few of the chemists, and what we realized is that especially in UP, where I spent a lot of time, and Bihar also similar behavior. Every 5-10 villages, there is a different pharmaceutical company operating there. So somebody has partnered with the local chhola chhap doctors and the 5-10 chemists over there in those that cluster of villages per se. And they have gotten some medicine manufactured, and which is very easy to do in India. Those medicines are very, very local. And they are enjoying like 50, 60, 70% margins, and they are generics in general, but quality is very, very poor. To maximize the margin, they keep the quality extremely poor. And the problem in India is that we have become aware of the generics, but the problem is that we haven't really instituted a quality check on the generics. So same salt medicine, there are like 10,000 different brands, and their quality can be 1 to 100, anything below 50 not even effective for the human body, and there are a bunch of those medicines that are out there in the market. The challenge was that how do you connect these patients with an online doctor while fulfilling the medicine requirements at the same time? So what we have done now, and it's been lots of back and forth. So earlier what we did was we'll give them a parcha with the salt name in it, and we'll encourage them to buy it locally wherever at the chemist. That again had the same problem of effectiveness of medicine and all that. Then the second thing we did was we removed the salt name, and we said, why not we supply you the medicine? And we'll ship it from our warehouse in Delhi, in Noida. Now, that works well for some portion of the customers and not the other portion of the customer. So what happens is if you have a skin issue or a sexual issue or something that is more long-term or can wait for a few days, the medicine will reach them in 3, 4, 5 days, depending on where they are. Typically in tier 3 city, it takes 5 days to get the product delivered via courier companies. So, but in case of acute, ki bachche ke kaan mein dard hai, you can't wait for 5 days, right? So what we have done now is for the earlier part of the problem, we continue to ship from our warehouse. And for the latter type of medicines, we have started partnering with local chemists. And what we do is when we partner with a local chemist, we give them certain pin codes that they will deliver to. And at the same time, we ask them to carry roughly 100-120 medicines that will be mostly prescribed in such acute cases. We already know what kind of issues come typically from that area, given that we have that data set. So we will give them those medicines to carry so that A, the quality is guaranteed. B, the fulfillment is guaranteed. And C, the customer knows where which particular chemist to go to get that medicine. And if the chemist cannot deliver, otherwise chemist is delivering at home. And of course, the medicine gets to the customer within few hours versus 5 to 7 days. So that is, it's still, you know, early days. We have around, I think, 40-ish chemist partners across 30 cities, 25-30 cities in UP and Delhi, NCR area. And these cities are like, you know, Lakhimpur, Sitapur, Gonda, Aligarh, Meerut, Hathras, tier 2, tier 3 level cities. And the goal is to get to a rural level where, you know, every 15 kilometers there is some chemist shop where they can go and get the medicine. Once we solve for that, then we'll of course go ahead and try to replicate the model across India. And also on the lab side, we have done the similar types of partnerships with 35 different labs, which allows pickups in roughly 70 cities of similar tier 2, tier 3 nature. So that's what we are doing on that end.
So if I can like summarize my understanding of your business, so you have consultation as a lead generation engine through which you have these people in tier 3 and lower areas who have problems, and you monetize the solution to those specific problems by offering lab tests or delivering medication.
Yeah, so just that, there's one step before that, which is that all the content. So we create a lot of healthcare content. Remember, we said the primary problem we started solving was the lack of awareness. So the content is the lead gen, and then we take them into the consultation funnel.
Okay, but consultation is also free. So that's like a next step of the lead gen process in a way. Okay.
Yeah.
So what kind of conversion do you see? Like for every 100 people who go through a consultation, how many actually spend money?
So roughly 20-25% of consultations lead to an order. We of course have the challenge of delivery, because again we don't have, you know, chemist partners across the board. So there's a big drop off there as well, which I don't want to get into in this particular conversation. But if you look at it from a last 6 month journey perspective, that same number has improved multiple fold. And part of the reason I believe is because of the trust we have developed with the customer. So earlier, you know, when the customer used to consult and they'll get this prescription and, will fulfill the order, the customer was like, ki yaar, inka kuch aur purpose to nahi hai. Well, these people take time to develop trust. But as they, you know, they're getting consultation, they're getting medicines delivered, they're getting cured, they see ki local medicine aajati hai, immediate aajati hai. So they're like, yaar, मैं क्यों कहीं जाके चार घंटे खड़े होके दवाई लूं डॉक्टर से 500 रुपए देकर, जब मुझे घर बैठे सब कुछ मिल रहा है. एंड दैट्स वेरी हार्ड फॉर देम टू गेट अवे फ्रॉम. तो स्लोली, यू नो, द कन्वर्शन रेट्स यूज टू बी 2% फ्रॉम कंसल्टेशन टू ऑर्डर, एंड नाउ इट्स लाइक मोर देन 10x ऑफ दैट नंबर. एंड वी believe that, you know, rest of the 75% people who don't order will also order, because they have a problem. That's why they were asking, right?
Beyond Campus is a production of the Podium.in, powered by Career Launcher. If you like this show, then we are sure that you will love our other shows on subjects like entrepreneurship, marketing, books, and drama. Check out thepodium.in for a complete list of all our shows.